We are going to learn Daf Lamed in Masechtas Nedarim. We're going to start from the last three lines of Chavtes Amaveis to set up the case. Now, before we could start the Gemara, really there's a very important thing to know what we're talking about over here. If you go back to the Mishnah the Mishnah of Chavches Amad Aleph says that if a person makes a neder that I want them to stay hektish until they get cut down, so the halacha is yesh lahen pidgin. So very important for our Gemara in order to understand what's going on over here is a machlekes bar pada or bar pada, some people pronounce it bar pada, and ula on how to translate the words yesh lahen pidgin. So Bar Pada says that it means that it remains hektish, that even if you redeem it, you have to go ahead, it goes back to hektish, because I specifically said that I want it to be hektish until the branches get chopped off. So that means even if I redeem it, I have to give it back to hektish. Fine. But actually, so this is Machlekes Rishonim, whether Ula argues on this point or doesn't argue on this point. But then the question is, once they get chopped down, what happens to them? So Bar Pada says, okay, now that they got chopped down, you have to redeem them and that's it. Whereas according to Ula, now that they got chopped down, they don't belong to Hektish anymore, so I don't even have to redeem them. But the first point is really the focus of what our Gemara says. As I said, it's Machlekes Rishonim, whether this is just Bar Pada Shita or Ula agrees to that first point also, which is, again, just to repeat, which means as long as the branch has not yet been cut down, it always belongs to Hektish, so that even if I redeem it, it reverts back to hektish automatically. And right, so the machlekes is according to this pshat. After you cut it, the machlekes would be after you cut it whether I still have to redeem it or not. That's according to the Rashi's pshat. According to the Ramosha Kartovi, his pshat is that Ula argues even on the first point. Ula argues even on the first point that whether or not it automatically reverts back to hektish even after I redeemed it, he holds that it according to Ula it does not, because it only belongs to hektish. That was just a time frame in which it would have belonged to hektish until it gets cut down. Okay, but that's actually, that point itself is actually important for the way we read the Gemara, because now we're ready to start the Gemara. Yosef Rav Abin v'Rav Yitzchak v'Rebi. So Rav Avin and Rav Yitzchak Berebi were sitting, Kamei the Rav Yirmiyah. They were in front of Rav Yirmiyah. The common nam name, Rav Yirmiyah. Rav Yirmiyah was falling asleep. He was tired while they were learning. He was falling asleep. Yosvi v'ka'amri. So they sat down. Again, this is talking about Rav Avin and Rav Yitzchak Berebi. They sat down. V'ka'amri l'bar. And they said the following. Libar podo. Again, so this is why we just introduced the machlekes. According to Bar Pada, the Omer Pada Chazaras v'kedushai, the Kaitchais, that even after I redeem them, they revert back to hektish. They automatically go back to hektish. So now, and again, notice they only ask this kasha according to Bar Pada, which is kind of the raya that the Ran brings, that we learn like Rav Moshe Kartovi's pshat, that Ula argues even on this first point. Even until they get chopped down, Ula will say that they don't revert back to hektish. Only Bar Pada says that. In any event, so according to Bar Pada's shita, according to the way he understands things, Tivshoit, now on the top of Lamed Rav Aleph, Tivshoit, we can be pushed to by Rav Hoshia. We can answer, based on this, we can answer the famous question that Rav Hoshia asked. He asked the following question. Hanoizun shtei prutois le'isha. So a man goes over to a woman and he gives her two prutos worth to a woman. La'omar lo, and he says to her, ba'achas iskachi li hayoyim, with one of these dollars I want to marry you today. Uba'achas iskachi li la'achas shagar sheikh, and one of them I want to marry you, I want to use for the marriage after I divorce you. So it's not going to happen now, it's going to happen later, if I divorce you or when I divorce you. So then I'm going to come back, I'm already giving you the dollar now, so that should be a good marriage later. So hachanami the havi kedushin. So let's say that this is a good kedushin. What's the comparison? The comparison is just like when I, because what I'm saying right now is that I want it to be hektish until I until it gets chopped down, which means even if I redeem it, I want to be re-makdish it. I want to make it again hektish later after I redeem it. Because otherwise, what would be the point? Again, according to this pshat of Ula, according to Bar Podo, that says that it automatically goes back. How is it automatically going back? It's because I'm setting it up so that even after I redeem it, it should automatically go back to hektish. So too, he wants to say the same thing is comparable. So this case also where I'm setting it up so that eventually, I'm giving you the money now, so that eventually it should automatically work for the second marriage later. So, Iyater Bahu Rabbi Yirmiyahu. So when Rabbi Yirmiyahu heard this discussion, he woke up, Omar Lahu, and he says, "My kamet damison, how could you compare these two cases? Podon hu lepodon lepodom acherim. How could you compare a case to when he redeems it to when someone else redeems it? Now, when someone else redeems it, let's talk on the simple level, and then we'll take it a little bit further to explain the way the Ran explains the Gemara. The simple level would be that what we're talking about over here is that if I make it hektish until a certain time, I redeem it. So since I was the one who made it hektish, it automatically reverts back to hektish. But if, let's say, in the same scenario where I made it hektish, someone else were to go and redeem it from hektish, we all agree that that person does not have to give it back. He does not have to give it back to hektish, because for him it's just regular hektish. Hektish owns something, you redeem it, he gets to keep it. Hektish doesn't have any rights over him once he paid the money to redeem it. It's only because of the person himself who made the initial donation, that he says, as between me and you, hektish, I'm going to make sure that it stays by you until it gets chopped down. So, since the way the Ran learns and understands is since it's me and Hektish, the two of us together, between me and you, Hektish, as long as it's not chopped down, I am going to make sure that it belongs to you. But that only works between their private conversation. But someone else comes in and gets involved, so I don't have rights to tell someone else who redeemed it that he has to give it back to Hektish. I don't have that right. It's only if it's in, so to speak, my control. My control makes it, I have to give it back to Hektish. Okay, so what's the point? So what Rav Yirmiyahu was saying over here is that when a husband divorces his wife, the moment she becomes an unmarried woman, she is like a third party. In order to marry somebody, the pasuk very clearly says ki yikach ish isha. It has to be the husband takes her, and not that she's silokach loy. He doesn't get to force her to be married. She gets to make her own decision. The fact that she's able to make her own decision whether or not to be married means she's in her own jurisdiction. She is like that third party, that someone else who redeems the hektish. He can't control that. And since he can't control that, so now it's out of his, so to speak, jurisdiction. It's out of his arrangement. And therefore, he cannot redeem her. She is equivalent to a third party because of the fact that once she's divorced, she gets to decide whether or not she, in general, by the way, she gets to decide whether or not she wants to be married. So therefore, it's the same thing as a third party coming in and redeeming it. And just like you would agree in the case of that, even in the case of Hegdish, you would agree that if a third party came in and redeemed it, that he would not have to give it back to Hegdish. So too, she's like a third party. She makes her own decisions. It's not his arrangement. Again, it's very important to understand that the way the Ran understands this is that it's his arrangement. It's his arrangement between him and Hektish. So here too also, it's his arrangement in the case of the Kedushin. It's only when it's under his control whether or not they're married. The moment it's out of his control and he needs her input, and she gets to decide whether or not they're going to be married, which would be the case once they get divorced. Once it's out of his control, so then he doesn't get to decide. And Mamela, it's not automatic. Now, of course, she could always agree. I'm not saying that she can't say, yes, I agree. But if she doesn't agree, again, in connection with the second marriage, if she doesn't agree, there's no way you can force it automatically. It cannot be set up so that it's automatic. So therefore, it's not comparable. As again, let's just read those words again. So Amar Lahu, Rabbi Yirmiyahu said, "My kamedam mison padon hu lepadon acherim." How could you compare when he redeems it versus when someone else redeems it? And as we explained, in the case of marriage, the moment she has her say in the matter, it's now like someone else. Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, as Rabbi Yochanan himself said, Podon hu chayzeres v'kedushais. If he himself was the one who does the redeeming, then it goes back automatically to the Hekdesh, because again, remember, that's all within his jurisdiction, that's all within his power, and he already agreed that any time he redeems it, it automatically goes back. But Podon acherim ein chayzeres v'kedushais. That if someone else redeems it, it doesn't automatically go back. And by the way, that is true even if the third person redeemed it and the original person bought it or took it from the third party. Even though it's in his house, even though it's in his under his power right now, but the hefsik is enough to say that it's not automatic. There's an interruption over here. And the Gemara finishes off, V'isha kipada badua cherim damya. And when a woman gets divorced, she's a free person to make her own decisions. She's no different than a third party who redeems it, who's not subject to your personal arrangements, and therefore it's not automatic. Again, as I said, she can always accept that she wants to get married. That's not a problem. But in terms of whether we say automatically reverse, it's not going to automatically revert back into the marriage. Okay. Just as a note, without getting into it too much, the Ran goes ahead and brings the other case. It's a very interesting machlokes rishonim over here, whether or not the Gemara has a conclusion, whether this is a psak halacha or this is just a suggestion and the Gemara doesn't have an answer. The Ran does bring the Rajba that says that there are other Gemaras in Shas and Perek Afal Pi and in Bava Basra also. Sorry, excuse me. Later in Masechtas Nedarim, there are other cases where we could be poshet the shaila. We just can't answer this question based on the raya from this sugya over here. And so about the woman. So the Rajba wants to say that based on the other Gemaras, we could say that she would be married. But the Ran himself doesn't like that pshat, and the Ran says, no, you can't, it's impossible to say. The bottom line is, the Ran says, in all the other cases that we're comparing it to, I still have somewhat of a control over what happens in the future. I could say that I want it to be hektish in the future. I have the right, because I have the right today to decide that I want it to be hektish in the future. Whereas by marriage, I can't, the way the Ran says it in a very funny way, is like, you can't be married a second time unless you're married a first time. Remember, because that's what he wants. After I divorce you, I want to remarry you. Yeah. And I can't jump to the second time. Which means right now, as we stand today, I don't have the power to marry you a second time. Because in order to marry you a second time, I must have married you a first time. Which means today, you can't jump to the second time. You can't be second married if you've never been married first. Therefore, I don't have the power today to make that decision. So Mamelo, the Ran says, I don't have the power to be, again, can't be pushed to Shiloh one way or another, but the point is I can't bring a raya from those other cases that it works in the future. Okay, now the Gemara finishes off and says, Itmar Nami, we learned again same idea. Amar Rav Ami, Amar Rav Yochanan, in the name of Rav Yochanan, Lo Yishanu Elisha Podon, who? This whole idea that it automatically reverts back to Hekdesh is only if he himself, the guy who originally set up the system, redeems it himself. But if other people redeem it, they are not subject to his own conditions. It does not automatically revert back to Hekdesh. And as we said before, just to repeat, that if someone else redeems it, as we just now said, that it doesn't go back to Hekdesh, even if the original person who made this, who set this arrangement up, gets it, gets the object back, it still doesn't revert back, because once the other person buys it, the chain of events is broken. There's no longer a chain of events that it's in his jurisdiction anymore, and the obligations for it to remain Hekdesh are no longer true. So he could redeem it, and the redemption is done. Okay, that takes us to the next Mishnah. Okay, now, the next Mishnah has a very interesting... We're going to go through a few Mishnahs now. The next Mishnah goes through the different types of Nedarim. Do you mean a general group or a specific group? So, here we go. Hanoidir miyardei hayam... Someone who makes a neder that he doesn't want to have any benefit from or to the people, sailors, let's call them, people who go out to the ocean. Mutter b'yoshvei hayabosha, he still remains mutter on the people who live on land. Meaning the sailors are a subcategory of people in the sense that they're a limited category. So he only means those people who go out to the ocean and not those people who live on land. So therefore, only those people are going to be usher. However, and again, this is the point, the way the Mishnah is set up over here. The flip side is, but if he makes the neder from those people who live on land, usher miyardei hayam, he is also usher on those people who go out to sea. Why? Because even those people who go out to sea are still included in the same category of people who live on land, because those people also have to come, eventually have to come back to land. Can't live on a boat forever out to sea. If your supplies run out, whatever it is, you do always come back to land. So therefore, living on land includes everybody. Now, the next line of the Mishnah, this is going to be the point of discussion of the Gemara. But we're not discussing those people who only travel on water from the city of Akku, which was a port, to the city of Yafo, which was a port, but they're relatively close to each other. Now, if you look on a map, one is a little bit further north, one is further south, but they're really only a number of miles away from each other. When we talk about the sailors, we talk about people who are going out to the sea, or going out on long trips for a period of time, but even those people come back to the Yabasha. Okay? So we'll have to see what is that last line in the Mishnah referring to. So that's what the Gemara is going to discuss. Rav Papa v'Rav Acha v'Rei d'Rav Iko. So this is Machlekes between Rav Papa and Rav Acha. What that last line of the Mishnah is referring to. Chad masniya reisha, v'chad masniya seifa. Is this last line of the Mishnah explaining the first case of the Mishnah, where we talk about that it's only referring to the sailors and not the people on land? Or is it referring to the last case in the Mishnah that we're talking, that even sea-bearing people are included in the Yabasha? So let's see. Mandatani Aresha Masnihochi. If you're learning that it's an explanation of the first line of the Mishnah, the way to learn it is as follows. Hanoider miyorde hayam, mutter biyoshve yabasha. So that's what the Mishnah told us, that if you make a neder regarding the people who live on land, who are sailors, who are out in the water, you do not include, so you'd be mutter in the people who live on land. So here's the explanation though. Ha biyorde hayam osur. But the implication, of course, is obviously that with the people that are out at sea, those are the people you made the nether on, so they're going to be osur. However, veloike elu, now on the top of Lamed Avayz, ha hochime akol yafoi. We're not talking about, when we talk about the sailors that you're trying to asr, we're not referring to those people who go from Akko to Yafo, the Halein Yeshva Yabasha Ninu, because those are really essentially people who live on land. I mean, so they go on an excursion for an hour, a couple hours out during the day. They're still land-based people. They just happen to be on a boat at the moment. That doesn't mean anything. Ella, so what do I mean by the sailors that I'm trying to answer? Ella me, Shadark and Lefroish, I mean those people who go out to the sea, who are there out for a while until they eventually come back. Now, so it comes out, according to this explanation, now this is the point that the Gemara is trying to make, otherwise there's no machlekes. It comes out, according to this explanation, that those people who are just out for an excursion and come back every day, you know, they're just a little trip here and there. Those people, what? Like a ferry. Yeah, like exactly. So people who go on a ferry are not considered sailors. Yeah. Just because you're out for an hour, even if you take the cruise line that goes around Manhattan for 3 hours, you're not a sailor all of a sudden. So those people, so it comes out that those people are still considered Yabasha, so it's a major kula. So when I say the sailors, I do not mean to include those people. So that's a kula. If you learn it as an explanation of the ratio of the Mishnah, that means you're learning it as a kula. Uman, demasne aseifa, but those who learn it as an explanation of the Sefer Masni Hacha, this is the way to learn the Mishnah. It'll be a Chumrah. Here we go. Hanoider miyoshve yabosha, somebody who says, I want to make an eder against those people who live on land. Also biyarde ayam, we do include those people who go out to sea. Now here's the Chumrah. V'loy be'elu ha'ochum me'akul liyafa bilvad, we don't mean to include even those people who go from Akko to Yafo, which is again a close trip, that they're included Yabosha. That's obvious. Even though they're sailors, that's obvious that they live on land. Even those people who go out for a long time, they're still considered living on land. Because eventually they will come back onto land. Now, what that does is, which is fine, which is again, which is the simple pshat in the Mishnah, that even say that the point is that even the Sefer said this, that it, that even those people who go out to sea eventually have to come back to land, so they're included in my neder of those people who live on the land. In any event, the point is, but the way we're setting up this last line of the Mishnah means to include even the sailors. Include those people who go from Akko to Yaffa. We're just saying that not only those sailors, but even the big sailors, even the sailors that go for a long time. Which means even those people who go for a short trip are in the definition of sailors. And that's why it's a chumrah, because now if I make a neder to aser all sailors, I am now including even the ferry driver. He's a sailor. Even the guys who are out a little bit here and a little bit there, they're not really going anywhere, they become included in the definition of sailor. And if I make a neder against sailors, they're included in that neder. So it comes out, this is the nafkamino between whether that line in the Mishnah is coming to include the Ferasha, is coming to include the Seifa. Of course, not of course, but we have, in Shulchan Aruch, or in Rambam, we paskin, we go to Chumro, and we're going to consider them sailors for these purposes. Okay. That's the next Mishnah. Oh, the next Mishnah continues. Hanoye miroye hachamo. Somebody who makes a neder from anybody who can see the sun. I'm translating literally over here for a moment. We'll see it's not exactly translated so literally. But that's what he made a neder. From somebody who sees the sun. Aser af besumin. He means to include even a blind person. Why? As the Mishnah itself explains, Shaloi niskaven ze el lamisha chama roya oison. Because what he really meant to say was that I mean that I'm making a neder on those people who the sun sees them. Now, that's not what he said. What he said was, I want to say, I'm making a neder on those people who can see the sun. So how did the Mishnah know to flip this around and say that's not what he meant? What he really meant is the other way around. He meant that the sun can see them. My taimo. So the Gemara itself asked this question. What's the reason that that's what he means? Midaloi ka'amar min haroyin. That he doesn't say those people who can see. See, if all he wanted to say was sight versus blind, somebody who has sight versus somebody who is blind, then he could say, I'm making a neder from those people who can see. He didn't say those people who can see. He said those people who can see the sun. Why did he add in the sun? This is the way the Ran explains. Why did he add in the sun? Must be that he didn't really mean to say that you could see the sun, especially the sun is not something that you look at, per se, you can see it. But he doesn't mean that. What he means to say is that the sun can see you. So what is the point if I'm trying to say everybody is seen by the sun? So the Gemara asks, La Fuke, so what are we coming to exclude? Dogim v'ubrin. What we're coming to exclude is fish, which are under the water, so they're covered and they're not seen by the sun, and an uber, obviously, that's inside a fetus, inside the mother's stomach, can't see the sun, is not exposed to the light. But everybody else is exposed to the light, whether or not they can actually see the sun or not. So that's, again, why a person would, because of the fact that the person said it in a funny way, he didn't mean it literally the way he said it. And therefore it includes anybody who is visible to the sun is included in this net. Again, the fact that he mentioned the sun means anybody who's visible to the sun. Okay, that takes us to the next Mishnah. Hanoider Mishchire Haroish. Once again, just like we said in the Mishnah before, that I said it in a funny way, so I didn't mean to translate it literally. The same thing is true with this case, with this Mishnah as well. So somebody makes a neder Mishchire Haroish, those people with black hair on their heads. Okay, so Aser B'Krochin, B'Karchin, he even means to include people who are bald, Ubali Sevas, and people who are older who have gray or silver hair. So though, even though they don't have black hair anymore, they're still considered in the category of someone who has black hair, and therefore they're included in the neder. However, umutar benoshim ubiktanim. But he is excluding, so why do I refer to them as black hair? I'm excluding the women and young children. She'ein nikron shchorei haroish el anoshim. When I use this phrase, this statement, this way of explaining, of akinui, as we're familiar with that word, as a nickname, I would only refer to men this way. I would only refer to, and it, apparently it includes all men, even if they don't necessarily have black hair anymore. As opposed to women and children, that they're not referred to in this manner. As the Gemara itself right away asks, my time. Why? What's the difference between, first of all, why does it include the old people and not include women and children? By the fact that he doesn't say, I'm making my neder on those people who have hair. So it has nothing to do with actually having hair. So even somebody who's now bald or somebody whose hair changed colors, that's not what he meant to exclude by the fact that he uses this very funny, again, there's a better way to say it if that's really your point. If your point is simply to exclude hairy people versus not hairy people, then you say somebody who has hair. The fact that he said black hair, why, the black hair is a reference to all men. As opposed to umotir benoshim bekatanim, as opposed to women and children, she'ena kron shchari aroish ela anoshim, because we only really mean to include men with this type of phrase. My taimo, as the Gemara itself asks, anoshim zimnin demichsu rashayhu, men sometimes they cover their head, the zimnin demiglu rashayhu, and sometimes they uncover their hair. Avo, so that's the reference to the black hair. Oh, I could see your hair. I could see your hair, so that's referring, and that's why that's where the expression or the phrase "I can see your black hair" that comes from, because they can sometimes see it. Avol nashim lo'ele michsu. This we can understand and appreciate, but women, their hair is always covered. This gets into the discussion whether this is true about young girls as well, but the point is that women, their hair is always covered, and therefore we wouldn't refer to them as a blackhead. That would be insulting if you referred to a woman by the color of her hair. So we wouldn't refer to women this way. Now, the chiddush is, the bigger chiddush is, ukatanim lo'ila miglu. And children, they never cover their hair. So they never cover their head. So mamela, again, I wouldn't refer to them as the black hair, because it's not something that's interesting about a child, because of the fact that their hair is always uncovered. Once again, if I wanted to refer to a child, I would say it in a different way. Again, this is the way the Mefarshim explained. I would say it in a different way to mean the children, I would say, uncovered hair. I wouldn't talk about the fact that their hair is black. The idea of, the notion of hair is black, that's like a novelty when you're dealing with a grown adult man that, oh, by the way, I could see his hair. So that's like, so to speak, interesting about him. So that's why we refer to them that way. Because of the fact that sometimes you see their hair and sometimes you don't see the hair, that's why the expression means something. But you wouldn't refer to a child that way, because you'd always be able to see their hair. Alright, this one you gotta pay attention to the way we phrase it. Hanoider min hayeludim. So the next Mishnah says like this. If I make a neder, so I'm gonna translate based on the simple shot, because we're gonna have to see the Gemara is exactly gonna take this apart a little bit. But let's translate it now and how you would read the Mishnah. Hanoider min hayeludim. If I make a neder from those people that are already born, mutter benoldim, then I'm mutter, meaning I do not mean to include in my nether those people who have not yet been born. Whether we're referring to actual fetuses or even children that will be born in the future that are, that don't exist at all yet. The point is, I only mean to include those people who have already been born. That's a simple pshat, and that's what I mean when I make that kind of nether. And again, it's also, the same thing applies to this Mishnah, because if I was trying to say people, that's not the word I would use. I would say people. The fact that I say hayeludim, it's a funny way to say something. So I mean to create a category over here. That's the Rishonim say this. It's hard because it's more similar. But again, it's not the simplest way to say things. If I mean people, just say people. I don't want to have enough from people. I could say that, and I want to live in the outback. I could say that. But the fact that I said hayeludim, those that are born, it's a funny way. So when I say it in that funny way, what I mean to exclude is those people who have not yet been born, as opposed to minanoldim. But if I say those people who noldin, who are, will be born, also minhayeludim, then I mean even those people who are born already. Then I mean to include everybody. However, on this point we have a machlekes. Reb Meir mater af biyeludim. Reb Meir includes even those people who were already born. Now, even, the Gemara will discuss, what is the word af? What are we referring to? Even those people who are already born. Who is excluded? The Chachamim Oimrim, and the Chachamim say, Lodis Kavan Zeh Elav Misha Darko Lihi Vole. What we mean to say is, anybody who can is capable of having children, of giving birth. of going through the birth cycle. So, and the Rishonim point out that the Chachamim actually is the same Shita as the Tanakama. The Chachamim are going back to the Tanakama Shita, that when I say Noldim, I mean to include everybody, not just being born or will be born, but capable of, in a cycle of birth. And therefore, it includes everybody. That is this is an explanation to the Tanakama Shita from before. Okay? But what we take from this Mishnah is that when I use the word Noldim, those people who will be born, Reb Meir has a funny, so we mean to include everybody. And Reb Meir says, no, it is mutter everybody. It's mutter even the Yeludim, even those people who were already born. So the Gemara's question is as follows. Lireb Meir, the loimi boy Noldim. If I use the word af, means also, so it's a, is it also including those people? So not only those people who will be born, and meaning if the people who will be born are not included, and the people who are born are not included, so then elamiman oser. So then, who exactly is Reb Meir? Then what was the purpose of the neder? There's no machlokes over here. Reb Meir is not saying it's not a good lashon neder. Reb Meir is saying that no, that's not what's included in the neder. So then, who is Reb Meir including in the neder? What is this neder according to Reb Meir including? What is he? What's part of the neder? So the Gemara says, you're right. You can't read Reb Meir on its face. You have to include other words into the mission in order for it to make sense. Again, because of the fact that he says, there are words missing in the mission, and the way to read the mission is as follows. Okay, so Reb Meir has an interesting way of reading the mission. Hanoider min hayeludim mutter. So far this is the same thing as we started off in the Mishnah. Somebody makes a neder on those people who were already born. Mutter ben oldim is going to be mutter on those people who are not yet born. As opposed to min hanoldin, but if I say those people who will be born also be yeludim, then I mean to include even those people, I need to include everybody, those who will be and those who were already born. Now, adding this in, now you have to add in the following. Reb Meir says, af hanoider min hanoldin mutter b'yeludim. He says, even if I make the neder on those people who will be born, it's mutter on the yeludim on everybody. Why? Why do I say that? So yeah, this is what you have to add into the Mishnah. Ki heichi denoider min hayeludim mutter b'noldin. Just like when I make the neder on those people who were born, does not include its mutter in those people who were not yet born. Just like when I say specifically those people who were born, does not include those people who were not yet born. So therefore, when I say so too, okay, so the way you have to read this is, so too the one who says that I'm making a neder on the Noldim, I also mean to exclude those people who are not yet born. Obviously, it doesn't include the people who were born, because the words I used in the neder were that I'm referring to those people who were not born. So it doesn't include, so therefore, obviously, the people who were born are excluded. What it means to say is even those who weren't born are excluded from my neder. So it comes out that really Reb Meir is matter everybody. But what's he based on? Again, it's a kind of an interesting way to, you have to get to what Reb Meir is saying. Just like when I said those who are born, that it does not include those who were not born, so too, even when I say those Noldin, even when I say the word that means not born, I also mean to not include the Noldin. I don't mean to include them either, and I certainly don't mean to include the people who were born. So the Reb Meir is saying that this is not a proper expression, this is not a proper neder, it's not going to work. Again, and he's saying af, because before you were including, you didn't include the unborn. So now to him also, the af is referring to also not including the unborn. That I never mean, benoldim, I never mean to include the unborn children, and maybe Reb Meir Shita is because this is Davar Shaloi Boilei Oilam. Whatever the explanation is to Reb Meir, which by the way that is Shita's Reb Meir, that a Davar Shaloi Boilei Oilam doesn't count. So over here also I mean to exclude everybody, whether they were born or unborn, if I use the expression of Noldin, those are that will be born in the future. Okay, so that is the explanation in Reb Meir. So the Gemara now, let's go into, as we when we were reading the Mishnah, I said, okay, I'm going to translate the Mishnah literally, and now we have to really get into what do these words mean, and what does it mean, why do these words mean what we think they mean, whether it means those that are born versus the unborn. So on that, the Gemara discusses as follows. So Rav Papa says, "Lememra de noldin dimis yaldin mashma." You're telling me that the word noldin, which again literally translated does mean those who will be born, is referring to those who will be born in the future. Elamayata, I'll bring you a pasuk that says, "Shnei banecha hanoldin lucha be'eretz Mitzrayim." When Yaakov Avinu is referring to, talks to Yosef, he says, he refers to your two sons who are nold in Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Now at that point, both Menashe and Ephraim were already born. When Yaakov comes to visit, when Yaakov comes to Yosef, Ephraim and Menashe already exist. We know that. I mean, that's in the Parsha, Ephraim and Menashe come. So what does he use the word nold to mean? That they will be born. So, Hochanamit is Yaldanu. Does he mean that they will be, does Yaakov Avinu mean that they will be born? So obviously, the word Nolden doesn't necessarily mean, or certainly not limited to mean, those that will be born in the future. Elamai. So Elam, what are you gonna say? Dialidu mashma, so you wanna say that, okay, fine. So maybe we translated it incorrectly. Nolden means those that were already born. I'll bring you a different pasuk. El me'ato tichsiv. There's a pasuk that says, "Hine ben noilad lebeis David yashio shemoi." There is a child noilad that literally translated means will be born to Beis David. Yashio shemoi. His name is Yashio. Now Yoshio was not yet born. Hachanami dahave. So, but if you're telling me that the word noilad really does refer, just like Ephraim and Menashe already were born, so Yoshio already was born. Hachanami dahave. You're going to tell me that Yoshio was born. Va'adai Menashe loibo. Even Menashe, who's the grandfather of Yoshio, was not yet born. So it's impossible. It's impossible to be referring to him as somebody that was born if we're talking about three generations later. And even the grandfather, even the father doesn't exist yet. So how exactly does the word, so Noilad has to mean in that context somebody who will be born in the future. Okay? Now the story with Menashe is very funny, is very interesting, because Yeshio was the one who was mispalel, who was going to die, and was mispalel to do tshuva so that he would have children. So again, so here it wasn't even clear that he was going to have children, because he was on his deathbed when he was mispalel that he should get back his life, and then he was able to have children. So clearly, it's a double step. This is what the Parat Yosef explains, how he explains this Gemara, that it's referring to that it's clear that he wasn't. It's not even possible to say, it wasn't even clear at the time that he said this nevuah that the baby was going to be born. So we forget about whether he existed or didn't exist. It wasn't even clear that it will happen. He had to do tshuva in order to be zoicha to have children. Elamash. So the Gemara in conclusion says elamash mahachi umash mahachi. So it has to mean that you're right. The word nolden could mean this, could mean that. It could mean future born. It could mean already born. It could mean that. Either way, ubinedarim holoch achar loshen bnei odo. But when it comes to making a neder, people, it means what people mean. It means. But with the way people talk, if we use a certain word in an expression, and in the way we talk, that's what it refers to, and that's what it means, then that's what it means. So here the question is like this, and this becomes the machlokes, by the way, between the Tanakhama and Rav Meir. Because remember, according to Rav Meir, he says, when I use the word noldim, the neder doesn't include anybody. That's Rav Meir's whole shita. So Rav Meir and the Tanakhama are arguing about whether Noldim refers to everybody or refers to nobody. Or refers to so turns out, this is the way the Ran learns, that it turns out the Machlekes, Rav Meir and the Tanakhama, they're really arguing, do I go, when a person says, I want this, make an eder of Noldim, am I referring to the Lashon of the Torah? And it can mean either one. Or am I referring to Lashon B'nai Adam, that it means only those kids who weren't yet born? So this is the Rav Meir saying it refers to Loshon B'nai Adam, that it's only those people who will be born, and that's not really a real neder, so I don't mean to include anybody. Whereas the Tanakhama Shita is saying Loshon B'nai Adam, you have to say that Pshat is Loshon B'nai Adam over here means that I mean the Loshon, that the Torah means that it can mean either one. And that's why when I say Noldim, I really mean both. I really mean both. But the important thing to know is by Nedarim you go Loshon B'nai Adam. So how do people say it? What do people mean? And when people say Noldin, they mean the ones who are not yet born. That's what they mean. That's what they mean, and that's why that's what the Neder is going to mean. Lastly, the Gemara on the bottom of the Yomid says, the Chachamim explain, they mean that it's anybody who's in the process of childbirth. So it doesn't mean they will be born or they won't be born, which again is the same shita as the Tanakhama shita, which is that Noldim refers to everybody. Even if I'm referring to the unborn, I'm referring to the born as well, because it means everybody. So the Gemara asks, Lafukemai, if it includes everybody, so then why am I using this funny Loshin to, why don't I just say everybody? So the Gemara answers, Lafuke Dogim Va'oifais. It's coming to exclude the reason why I'm referring to it in this way is I'm referring to those who go through the process of birth, as opposed to fish and birds, which lay eggs, and they lay eggs, so then it's not, they're not part of the birthing cycle. So if they're not part of the birthing cycle, they're not included in the nether, as opposed to the humans and animals, domesticated or regular animals, that they have, they go through birth. So when I say Noldin, I'm referring to those who have a natural, again, what we think of as birth. Okay, we'll stop over here.